This episode of the Axon Creative Podcast is brought to you by Skillshare. Explore your creativity at skillshare.com/AC and get a free trial of premium membership. Hey everyone, welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I am your host. So over the past year, the way that we interact with one another has probably permanently changed. You know, even when we go back to some degree of normalcy with regard to the workplace, you know, and some of us go back to offices, chances are we're still going to be incorporating digital meetings into how we go about our work. I think we've just discovered there are some things that are better virtually and there are some things that are better in person. And so we're going to have kind of the best of both worlds. But digital interactions, virtual interactions are very different from live in-person interactions. You know, we aren't wired biologically, psychologically to interact with people via a two-dimensional screen. We're wired to pick up cues in person. We're wired to interact with the carbon form of our collaborator, not the virtual form. So how do we as virtual collaborators communicate more effectively, especially if we're leading teams or we have to manage clients or we have to pitch ideas? How do we communicate in a way that will resonate with the other person when we're staring into a tiny camera? Today's guest is Erica Dewan, and she has a brand new book. It's called Digital Body Language. She's going to help us understand how to communicate effectively via all of these new tools that we're using to collaborate and communicate with our peers and our teams. Before we dive into that, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Skillshare. So we talk all the time on the show, and I wrote about it in the Axon Creative and Die Empty and so many of my books, frankly, about the importance of skill development. If you want to thrive, not just as a professional, but if you want to thrive as a human being, you need to be investing in skill development. You need to be growing yourself, growing your portfolio of aptitudes. Well, Skillshare is a great place to do that. You can witness your own transformation as you turn small steps into giant leaps. Skillshare makes it possible. Skillshare is an online learning community that offers membership with meaning. With so much to explore, real projects to create, and the support of fellow creatives, Skillshare empowers you to accomplish real growth. You know, we talk all the time on the show about the importance of developing your voice, of putting something into the world that will resonate uniquely with your audience. And there's a course on Skillshare called Find Your Style, 5 Exercises to Unlock Your Creative Identity, taught by Andy J. Pizza. That is a phenomenal step for you in developing, for finding your unique voice. There's a course called Productivity for Creatives, Build a System That Brings Out Your Best, taught by Thomas Frank. You will learn how to build a system that helps you approach your work each and every day in a way that positions you to do your best work. If you want to grow and change, you have to do different things. It begins by investing in skill development. Practice makes progress. Advancing toward a goal is achievable with short lessons and hands-on projects with Skillshare. There's nothing better than getting better. Accomplishing growth is extremely satisfying. And by the way, Skillshare is also incredibly affordable. An annual subscription is less than $10 a month. So explore your creativity at skillshare.com/AC and get a free trial of premium membership. Again, that's skillshare.com/AC to get a free trial of premium membership. And we thank Skillshare for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Well, I'm excited to have on the show today Erica Dewan. She is the author of a new book. It's called Digital Body Language. And this is something we all need to figure out. We all need to wrestle with because we are living in a new world. We're tired of hearing that phrase, but we are. We're living in a new world of work. So Erica, welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Todd. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, we're privileged to have you. You were on the Today Show earlier today. So the fact that we've got you on our show, that's pretty cool. We love that. That's awesome. So this phrase, digital body language, I've never heard that phrase before. I've never encountered that phrase before in any capacity. What is digital body language?
Digital body language are the cues and signals that we send in our digital communication that make up the subtext of our messages. Everything from the punctuation we use in emails to our response times to how we show up on a video call screen to whether we use emojis or not actually send signals to others about trust, respect, credibility, and engagement.
And so this is not just Zoom calls. This is not just us, you know, seeing one another on camera. You're saying this applies to any form of digital communication because that's so much of how we communicate these days is digitally, and some of it's text, some of it is, you know, just audio, some of it is video. But you're saying digital body language is infused in all of those things.
That's right. Pre-pandemic, roughly 75% of face-to-face collaboration was based on nonverbal body language. But even pre-pandemic, roughly 70% of team collaboration was already virtual. In the last year, most of us, for all teams that had the capability, actually had 100% virtual collaboration. And so in today's world, where many of our body language cues are invisible, the truth is body language didn't disappear, it's transformed. We now infuse digital body language signals to bring back emotional nuance and tone. The key, though, is to make sure we're cognizant of the signals we are sending, even if we don't intend to.
Okay, I want to dive into that. You know, what are some of the, can you give us some examples of some cues that we send, maybe unwittingly, that signal certain things to other people that communicate to them what we're thinking and feeling, even if we don't intend it?
I'll share one of my favorite stories from my new book, Digital Body Language. One of my clients sent a message to his boss that said, "Do you want to speak Wednesday or Thursday?" It was for an urgent conversation with a client. And his boss's response was, "Yes." Now, I love to share this story because maybe he was rushing, maybe he was multitasking, but the honest truth is in today's world, reading messages carefully is the new listening and writing clearly is the new empathy. We are living in an age where we don't just talk the talk or walk the talk, we write the talk. And one of the most critical things that we have to do is realize that what was implicit in our traditional body language, the good intent that came from a head nod and direct eye contact and a smile, now has to be explicit in our digital body language.
So what are some of the effects of us not being intentional about our digital body language? How is that affecting our workplaces?
I'll give you some examples of some of the things we're doing and then how it's affecting our workplaces. The first one is constantly being in a rush or choosing hastiness over thoughtfulness. One of the things that I've studied and I talk about in my book is that there is a rise of often rewarding the fastest person who responds to an email or the quickest person to jump into a Zoom call instead of prioritizing thoughtfulness over speed. A simple way you can overcome this challenge, which does factor and cause groupthink in cultures, it reduces engagement, it cuts out introverts who need time to process, is to be more thoughtful about how you engage. One of my clients has a process where she sends agendas 48 hours in advance of the meeting. And then in the meeting, she has everyone share their responses in the chat tool first so that they have time to process and share in writing. And then she calls on people with different or diverse ideas. So the challenge is hastiness. The impact is not only innovation that is dwindling, but also productivity. And the way we can overcome it is with better digital body language. Another example is we are seeing a rise of rampant multitasking with email anxiety and Zoom fatigue at all-time highs. I think that this is not only a major risk to an employee satisfaction, but it's a major risk to future competitiveness in our workplaces and well-being, which is a big topic right now. And so one of the ways to overcome that I recommend is to be thoughtful. Stop having 30 or 60 minute meetings for 10 minute conversations or 40 minute conversations. Initiate simple tools like I call it the Zoom BCC when someone doesn't need to be in a Zoom meeting anymore. Yeah. Just in chat, write BCC for certain people, then they won't stay on and just multitask because they have fear or guilt that they were invited for the whole meeting. So we have these different challenges today because we can't connect exactly like we did in the office online, but with simple, effective digital body language, we can bypass some of these challenges and create cultures of more inclusion and clarity.
One of the byproducts of, one of the byproducts of when digital body language fails is miscommunication. You know, I often talk about how in organizations, the biggest source of conflict is typically missed expectations, whether they're expressed or not. So it could be, I have expectations of you, Erica, and you don't hit them, but I haven't explicitly stated them to you. I just assumed you knew what I expected of you. And so therefore I'm now frustrated with you and it bleeds over into our meetings and it gets really tense in the meeting and nobody knows why that's going on. It's just something that happens. You say that the lack of effective digital body language has created a crisis of miscommunication. What are some ways that that plays out in the workplace? And what are some things we can do to mitigate the effects of that?
One chief marketing officer told me that she was on a team call reviewing a deliverable that her team had been working late nights on to have her present to the board. And when she was reviewing the doc, she recalled a slide that she wanted more color, more details on. And she said something of the likes of, let's put more detail on this topic into the deck. She thought she was actually saying, let's add two more bullet points. 1 week later, her team comes back with 10 additional slides. They'd probably spent about 40 hours. She was looking for two more bullet points. Not only was the team demotivated when it turned into two bullet points, but she realized that she was not being clear. She was just being brief. One of the major risks, especially for senior leaders, but for anyone trying to foster creativity in their cultures, is to never confuse a brief message with a clear message. Take the time to make sure you are explicit around what you need. And remember that your teams, your colleagues, your clients, your customers can't read the furrowed brows the same way, can't read the smile, don't know if you're on the verge of tears or you're really excited. So we have to reinforce and bring back this nuance with more clarity in our verbal and written communication.
I love that people do think that being concise means being clear. They confuse those two things. And in a meeting, you know, if we're physically present with someone, sometimes speaking concisely is effective because you can pick up the nuance, but it's a little harder to do when we're communicating virtually, especially if we're communicating by text, you know, by emails or something similar. What are some other things that leaders can do specifically to increase the degree of effective digital body language that's being used in the organization?
In my book, I talk about four laws of digital body language that leaders can implement on their teams to really move from a culture of misunderstanding, anxiety, and paranoia to true confidence, collaboration, and trust. The first law is to create a culture that values others visibly. Now, pre-pandemic, that used to mean valuing others by getting into a room together, having an offsite, taking them out to dinner. In today's world, I like to say that valuing visibly is valuing people's times, schedules, and inboxes. Not chronically canceling, not reading agendas, not being thoughtful of individuals' time, but taking that moment to, at the beginning of a meeting, say, here's what I want to achieve. Here's why you all matter here. And if we get through this in 15 minutes, we'll end the meeting 15 minutes early. That will quickly value others visibly and acknowledge the differences of introverts, extroverts. Not everyone is the same. And if you say, you know, does everyone agree on a Zoom call? It may be harder for certain people to say, I disagree. So taking that extra step and being thoughtful can go a long way in creating engagement. The second law is to communicate carefully. And I already shared a couple of stories about the importance of that, but think before you type and create that culture where there's no room for ambiguity. The third law is to collaborate confidently. And what I mean here is that individuals need the freedom to take conscious risks together, to feel safe enough to speak up. And that involves also, as leaders, being consistent in your messaging, having clear norms around who needs to know what by when versus everyone just trying to figure it out, and having processes so that people can regularly be in the loop. And then last but not least, the fourth law is what I call trust totally, which means We have to give others the benefit of the doubt, show our vulnerabilities, even though connecting online is awkward. In many ways, it can allow us to create a better equalizer, to be less geographically biased, more inclusive of individuals globally, so that we can hear and learn more and innovate more from everyone around us, not just those in front of us.
Fantastic. And it's super helpful. I mean, I think, you know, we are experiencing a change that was going to happen, most likely this transformation to primarily working virtually, communicating virtually. That was probably going to happen anyway, but we were forced to adapt to it within a matter of weeks rather than years. And there have been some byproducts of that, and would love to talk about some of those difficulties, the specific ways in which maybe it's affected us. There's something, a concept that you talk about called formality confusion, which I'd never considered before, but could you describe what formality confusion is and how do we begin to get past it?
One of the most exciting parts about my research on digital body language was really decoding the different aspects of digital anxiety that occur. And, you know, some of the examples are brevity or passive aggressiveness or slow or no responses. But one of the most intriguing ones was when there was a switch in formality or misalignment in formality, how formal an email should be, how formal a conference call versus informal it should be. And I think that one of the things that I've identified is that how formal or informal we are in our written messages, in our verbal communication on calls, actually does imply certain signals. And it's important to read and understand these signals. I'll give you an example. One of the leaders that I interviewed for my book, Trisha, is a head of HR at a technology company. And she talked about how one of her junior teammates, a millennial, was sending an email to the CEO of the company. And she wrote in the email, "Dear Mr. Etling," instead of "Dear Mike." Everyone calls him Mike. And Trisha, the head of HR, had to have a conversation with her team member saying, you know what, that was a little too formal. But what was interesting is for her team member, who is a millennial, email, especially she was a younger millennial, born after 1995. And for her, email is quite formal. And so she took a more formal lens. But for Trisha, who's a Gen Xer, email can be informal. You know, you can say hi, Mike, and such. And so formality confusion can show up in lots of different ways, whether it's that the fact that we don't know exactly the right cues for the cultures we're in or we're trying to learn them. But the most striking thing I identified is when there's a switch in formality, that's when people really get anxious. So for example, if someone responds to you back and forth for many months, and then all of a sudden they start to loop in their assistant, and you now have to work only with their assistant as a gatekeeper, and it's much harder to get in touch with them, that's an example where formality confusion can leave you anxious. Even simple things like email signatures can imply certain meanings. One of my good friends, Sam, told me that she often uses different email signatures depending on how she feels about someone. She may write warmly or best if she's feeling good or in a friendly mood. But when she's a little upset, she may start to write sincerely or regards. These are just simple examples of how formality confusion can show up. And what I recommend is always assume the best intent. Try not to get emotionally hijacked by some of these different signals. But if you are seeing a repetitive issue and a big shift in formality, it may be good to hop on the phone and understand why.
Yeah. Yeah. Another anxiety that you write about is timing anxiety, which is something that we all experience. And people listening won't know this because it will be edited out. But we just had an example of that a few seconds ago where there was a pause on your end. And I was sort of sitting here like, what's going on? Because we're not in the same room together, right? So it's a great example of that. Again, people won't hear that, but that's what happened. What is timing anxiety and how can we alleviate that?
We all know what it's like to be in a room with one another, to have a back and forth, a synchronicity of conversations, to know exactly what people felt when we shared something and get their immediate reaction, whether it was through their furrowed brows, through their smile, or through their pursed lips. Today, we may send an email and hear crickets, not hear back for 2 hours, 2 days, 2 weeks. And this level of timing anxiety, of not hearing back in that instant format, can create a high levels of anxiety. And it can vary. Some people feel stressed if they don't hear back in 24 hours. Other people feel a sense of anxiety if they don't hear back in weeks. One of the most important things I recommend when it comes to timing anxiety is to set some response time expectations to really avoid this emotional waste that gets in the way of just doing great work together. Maybe someone just missed an email. Maybe they were on the subway. Maybe they, you know, knew they'd get back to you. But if you are nervous or feeling anxiety, avoid reading into the last conversation for clues. Make sure that you send a response time expectation. Just say, I need a response by Thursday. And if you don't hear back, feel the liberty on Thursday to follow up. Another thing you can do, if you are someone on the receiving end that doesn't have time to respond in detail to a question, you can simply respond and say, got this. I'll get back to you soon. Just a simple, quick response actually is better because of the lack of synchronicity in our communication today.
I love that. That is fantastic. I want to ask you about what comes next, because I think there has been this steady march toward what we would call normalcy. You know, let's get back to normal. Let's get back to the way things were. But I'm curious to get your perspective. Like, what is all of this, the world of collaboration, going to look like after COVID?
I believe that in the last year, we've seen more disruption, yet more innovation than in perhaps the last 10 years, Todd. All of us as leaders and team members have had to reimagine how we connect and collaborate. Digital tools that got little traction 4 years are now business requirements, not only for our teams, but also our customers, our clients. Some of them we'll expect to use video calls as the new norm. We'll prefer to start with a video call instead of starting with a face-to-face meeting. And I think what this requires us all to do is to not just expect we're going to go back to the way it was. We're not going to go back to work. Instead, we have an opportunity to transform how we work, to go forward in a way that brings in some of the new opportunities in creative ways that our digital shift has been better for us. For example, we are less geographically biased. We are more inclusive of not just who's in the room, who's in the office, but who wants to engage. We are also less visually biased. I never will forget a call I was on pre-pandemic where three of us were remote, three people were in the office, and it wasn't until the 26th minute of a 30-minute meeting that someone in the office said, "Does anyone on the phone have something to share?" In today's world, we can be much more inclusive of those that aren't in the room. And I think that this is the moment to reinvent our new work norms. It's a moment to not shy away. If we try to just go back to the way it was, there will be a backlash from individuals who love the flexibility and the creativity of our digital world. So I think that the answer is somewhere in the middle, and it's up to all of us to solve it and create that new norm together.
Yeah, that's one consistent theme I've heard from people who are who lead organizations is, listen, there is no return. There's no return to normalcy. It's good. You know, we're going to have blended, you know, we're going to have some meetings where we're going to meet virtually, because why do we need to all be in the same room? And then there are going to be some times when, yes, we absolutely all need to be in the same room, but it almost feels like we've developed a bit of resilience that we didn't have prior to the pandemic, right? Like we have more tools in our toolbox than we had before.
In many ways, it's very much true. I mean, Todd, you've been helping us all think more creatively for years. And I think that this moment or these circumstances just created forced innovation for everyone, not just those that already think of themselves as creative.
Absolutely. Well, Erica, this has been a fascinating conversation. I am really excited about this book. It's called Digital Body Language. If people want to know more about you and about the book and your work, where can they go?
My new book, Digital Body Language, is available everywhere, Amazon, Audible, at Barnes & Noble's, you name it. So I hope you'll check it out, share it with your bosses, your family, your friends, and you know, be part of the digital body language revolution. You can also learn more about me at ericaduan.com. And if you enjoyed this session, you'll enjoy the free digital body language quiz on my website to help you understand what type of digital body language style you have so that you can better communicate with others.
Fantastic. And that's it. That is at ericadewan.com as well.
Yes.
Fantastic. Well, Erica, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us and for sharing your wisdom with us today.
Thank you so much, Todd.
And as always, thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe where you listen to podcasts. AC Premium subscribers, stick around after the music. I'm going to share my personal takeaways from the show. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.